Kevin Koval, what's good?
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We are in such a funny, weird place right now.
Small spaceship.
I know.
It's like the engineer's room on the spaceship.
On the spaceship. It actually is. Because it's like, Ernie the engineer's room.
Oh, it's true.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
But it's good to be... I could tell by the sound quality, it's good to be back in the brand new WGN studios.
It's no shots.
No, no shots. It's just, you know, we're bringing you that crispy clear. this has been a long time coming, this one.
It has been. You know how many times I rescheduled this one?
I know. It's probably
He's
all
so patient.
Right. I know, he is. A very patient man.
Shout out this That's guy.
A very pious Jew.
I can't say that.
What does pious mean?
Yeah, no,
it's like peaceful.
Yeah, and like a devout kind of maybe not to the
Are
religion, but to the culture.
No,
but to the culture.
So I guess I'm devout to the culture of it. Yeah,
this is a long time coming. We have an incredible creator of a emerging in industry space in the city of Chicago, someone who was put on for the culture both as a journalist, as a DJ, now as one of the CEOs of Close Sessions. I don't know if that's the right title.
I don't like to call myself a CEO because it just sounds weird.
But that sounds so official.
But one of the architects of Close Sessions, which we'll talk a lot about, someone who's consistently put on for the culture and put on for so many up and coming artists in the city of Chicago, particularly
Runs
in the
Ruby,
last decade.
Ruby Hornet.
Yes, right. Historically and back again.
Yes.
Without further ado, in the corner store, y'all.
Yo.
Alex Fruchter.
What's up?
Hey, man. Good to have you.
You can call me RTC for this podcast.
Okay, all right.
I'm going to assemble.
DJ RTC. Yeah. Okay, all right. Good. We'll go back and do...
But what does RTC stand for?
Is it
like letters from your last name? I was thinking about it.
Oh, you know, I didn't think about that either, but that would be cool if I did, because when they printed my ID, they left out an R. This is like totally messed up. So it's like those are the letters that people mess up the most.
Yeah.
In my last name. But right now it doesn't mean anything. When I first started DJing in college, I had these two friends and we all lived in a kind of motel styled apartment. Like there were no hallways. You come out of your apartment and then the next guy is next door. So three of us lived there and we all, like I was a DJ, my friend Ian was Two Scoops Malone, he's a MC and graffiti writer from New York City.
Two Scoops Malone.
Two
is
Scoops.
He Italian?
No, he's actually, his dad
is...
Is
Malone Italian?
He's got an interesting background.
Like
he's Jewish, his mom's from New York City, his dad is from, I want to say, a Middle Eastern country that I forgot which one, Egypt maybe, but a Jew from that country.
Okay.
A Jewish Egyptian?
Something. Look, Jew, we're out here. We're everywhere.
No, I don't
Cannot
doubt
stop
it.
Us.
I literally have never met a Jewish Egyptian.
Ian
Alamon. Shout out to that dude. He was a good friend of mine, Two Scoops. And then another friend
name.
Of mine,
two
Nate.
Scoops.
That's a good
We would
name.
Just get high. I don't know if I could say that, but we would get high. And
you can say whatever you want.
I would DJ. My other buddy, Nate, was from Ann Arbor, and he actually knew and came up with like the Athletic Mic League guys. So I...
Nice.
Anyway... I had turntables, they would rap and do stuff, and just we'd kind of all have alter egos, and I'd hit record and play records, and they would rap and do stuff, and like there was Two Scoops Malone, and he also had another alter ego called Scissor Snips.
Yes!
Because he was a moyle.
And I just made up one day Roosevelt Treasure Chest, a pirate on cassette, and that was going to be my thing. And when I started doing stuff, and then I'm linked back up with Knowledge, fast forward to like the 2007-08 time frame, and he's like, yo, Roosevelt Treasure Chest is too long to
it's
put on
long.
These flyers,
yeah,
so
yeah.
We're just going to go with RTC, and then that just, I was like, all right, that's better, because I kind of was like waning on the name, but too deep in it. I have like so many drops. Doing these early interviews, like 04, 05 frame, when you could still get like DJ drops for your mixtapes. So I'd interview like someone like Busta Rhymes and then ask them to do a drop, and I have so many recordings of people like, yo, this is blah, blah, blah. And I'm with, wait, what's the name again? And so it was like, I was too deep into it to change. But luckily RTC came around and, yeah.
Oh, so they would say the whole thing.
They would say the whole thing. And then my mixtape series, A Poor Craftsman Always Blames His Tools. So
wow, long-ass names. You're bigger than long-ass names.
But yes. They did it. Everybody
That's
did
a good
it, too.
Name, though.
People would be like, okay, I fuck with that. Like, yeah.
It's
like,
raw.
It's like long, but in the best way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's thoughtful. We're so far ahead. And before we get too further.
Sorry about that.
No. It's great. I want to provide you with, the goods that come in the corner store. We got some snacks for you today.
Sweet.
First of all, I thought, Mike was coming too. So I got a bunch of shit, but, here, this. You seem like a sparkling water kind of guy. This is a raspberry lime,
okay.
Sparkling water. I thought maybe you'd like that. I got these from Mike in mind because I know he delights in the culinary. But these are some Kettle Brand Korean barbecue chips.
Okay, I'll bring these to him.
I like that it's purple.
Yeah,
my dad actually yesterday. I saw my parents. My dad gave. He's like, I got something for Mike. Like, okay, and it was a bottle of Manischewitz. So.
Nice. And this is also from our aspirational sponsor, RX Bar. We got you a peanut butter chocolate bar, a protein bar. It's nice. 3 egg whites, 14 peanuts, 2 dates. No bullshit. That's RX Bar, our aspirational sponsor.
Nice. Thank you, RX Bar.
Yeah. Salutes.
No BS.
We love you.
That's awesome.
For the future.
Thank you. I've been doing my shreds, so I need this protein.
Hey, man. Yeah, no, you gotta stay fortifying your muscles. Yeah, man, so you grew up in Hyde Park, right?
Correct, yep.
Yeah. And so that is a really interesting place in the city of Chicago, both in terms of, I guess, the kind of... for Chicago, the kind of integrated space that it is, but
right.
Particularly as you developed, historically, Hyde Park is also kind of a hip-hop center for
mm-hmm.
the city.
Mm-hmm.
So, coming up, like, what did your parents do, and what was some of the music? Yeah, what did your parents do? We'll start there.
So my mom was a teacher in CPS. She taught, when I was a kid, she was teaching at the neighborhood public school, William H. Ray Elementary, and then... Throughout my adolescence, she left Ray to then work for the Board of Education in writing curriculum. She was always a reading, writing teacher. And then went to another. She'd just been in CPS and education my whole life. And then my dad was working as a stockbroker for a while. That's what he did my whole childhood and kind of just felt, didn't want to have a job at all, but I think a prerequisite to marry my mom was my grandfather said he had to have an actual job, and he had just been doing the stock market thing, figuring out what he wanted to do, playing the stocks. And then,
sounds like a very Jewish grandfather thing to say, too.
Yeah. He was a rabbi, so.
Oh, listen, yeah. He's like, look, if you're going to marry, is your dad Jewish?
My dad is Jewish.
Okay, yeah. If you're going to marry, yeah.
He's a...
He got that talk.
An old Chicago Jew from Humboldt Park.
Yeah. Mm. All right. Wow. And so what kind of music did you have coming up in the house?
So the music in the house, honestly, first off, my parents were much older than anyone in my peer group. They had me at 45 and 42, respectively. So yeah. A lot of the partying or whatever they were doing was kind of gone. But I remember the music they had and would play was the old... Alan Sherman records. So that was my introduction to music and the song. The album where he's sitting in a his face is coming out of a mound of nuts. My son is a nut, and like the old King Louis records. So I was introduced to the parody music.
Yeah, which is in the tradition of like Jewish shtick.
I don't know much about that.
So that was honestly what was
I'll
around.
I'll play you some shit later.
I'm going to fuck up the number, but however many thousands-year-old man that Carl Reiner...
2,000-year-old man. Yeah.
A
Mel
lion
Carl Reiner.
Eating my foot off. That was the music.
No, these are bars.
And then, they really are some bars.
Comedic bars.
But then I have a brother who's 8 years older than me, and he was playing all kind of new stuff, new and old. I mean, he veered more into the, like, Bob Dylan... Lane, so a lot of Bob Dylan, Grateful Dead, but then he also had you know, would be walking around. And I didn't kind of know it at the time until I rediscovered it later that he would be listening to Public Enemy or the Beastie Boys and that early, from a hip-hop side, the Def Jam stuff. But I kind of, like, later on, I heard License to Ill, and I'm like, oh, now I remember where I thought my brother was making up those, like, well, he'd be chanting, like, Alibaba and the 40 Thieves, just randomly. I had no idea. Like, oh, this dude is making some shit up right here. And then I go back, like, as a, you know, adolescent and get into music. I'm like, oh, that's where that kid was coming from.
Yeah.
So, and then music from my friends was really, I think, more so than my home. It was really school and stuff where I was getting things.
Well, yeah.
What were they listening to?
So, the big things were Green Day, Dookie. That when that album came out, that was very popular with everybody. Warren G was a big deal. That whole, like, I think when we were getting into music and consciously able to pick our own stuff, it was Green Day, Nirvana on one side, and Snoop, Dr. Dre, the West Coast, is like Ice Cube. That's kind of what I remember first. And then also The Box with like Crucial Conflict, and we'd see like random Prime Meridian videos. So that was the mix common. I remember meeting Twista at Coconuts before I knew who or what Twista was about.
Wow.
And stuff like that. But what was cool about Hyde Park and Ray School was that everybody was listening to this, the music as well. Like the eclecticness that I think the neighborhood has, that was what, like, everybody knew Green Day, no matter what.
Right. That's interesting.
Or Snoop and Dre, you know, vice versa.
Mix. I also think the Warren G, I feel like a lot of folks owe a lot to Warren G. I feel like,
of course,
you know,
yeah.
Just like the singing, rapping, you know, a lot of he kind of you know, fostered a style that I think we're still, you know.
Yeah, he also is in the lineage of the rapper, producer, DJ.
Yeah,
you know, he had a hit rap song that referenced himself as the DJ. Yeah. That was like crazy.
Yeah. So Hyde Park. So yeah, tell us a little, especially for folks who might not know, particularly at that time, like the, you know, some of the makeup of Hyde Park and just navigating, you know, the schools and the streets. Like, who was around? Why is it such an interesting neighborhood given the makeup of Chicago?
Well, so I mean, just if you took the microcosm of the street that I grew up on, Hyde Park Boulevard, my next door neighbor was a kid named Jacob Bromberg. His dad was a musician named David Bromberg, who was a folk musician and played and toured with bands like Bob Dylan and Paul Simon. And that's like, now then he was selling violins and living next door. Our downstairs neighbor when I was a kid was Carol Moseley Braun, before she became the senator and things, just a regular.
Damn. I interned for her in D.C.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, 94, 93, something like that.
My brother worked for her until she lost, when she was a senator, and then she lost, and he got fired. That was a bad time. But yeah, so you had like that, and then, of course, the racial makeup of the neighborhood. You got like Muhammad Ali in there. You have people like all my friends that would come from other countries whose parents were studying at University of Chicago. Mm. So there was a lot of that. And I think I was interviewing Common. My first time I interviewed Common, I was doing it at my parents' house, and I said to like set up a question, I was like, yeah, I'm actually talking to you from Chicago right now. I'm in Hyde Park. And he's like, oh, where? And I told him where I was at. And he's like, oh, I lived right around the corner on Cornell when he wrote his album, the Resurrection album and stuff. So that's a great eclecticness. There's
it's an odd thing.
A street smart and a book smart all combined.
All the same, yeah.
Do you think that Hyde Park's lost that now, or?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I'm the right person to ask, simply because I don't live there currently. So I feel like I don't know the necessarily day to day. But as a observer who visits my parents, is definitely a lot busier and changed. I was telling Kevin when we were coming up here, just about the parking. I can't. It's very hard to find parking. The prices of the properties are through the roof. So, But has it lost that? I really don't know, because when I go down and walk around, or I was at Hyde Park Brew Fest, like, I still feel the same feelings, and there's a lot of, like, still art and culture and people there. But I don't know. Also, when I was a kid, when I kind of got to high school, things like Rose Records closed, and things like they took all of Harper Court got shut down, so they lost like the Fly Store and Dr. Wax,
right.
And a lot of the cool things were replaced. Coconuts shut down and was replaced by a mattress store. So now you walk down 53rd and you have the Silver Room and you have like Sir and Madam, and so I think that's better than when I was a teenager and like in college and come home on winter break and like you got an athletic co where the record store used to be, and you got like real estate offices where other cool shit was. At least now there's stuff to do.
Well,
again.
It certainly seems to be a bit of like a cultural renaissance happening on 53rd Street. I mean, it coincides, of course, with, you know, rapid gentrification that's also mm-hmm. occurring on that street because of the university.
And I mean, it just looks nice. It looks nice.
And, you know, Sir and Madam is there, the Silver Room I mentioned.
Yeah.
It's not just corporate businesses. It's a lot of...
Yeah, the Promontory puts on for a lot of local folks. I mean,
of course, yeah.
The dude that is booking at the Promontory was a camp counselor of mine.
Jake?
Oh.
Yeah, that's funny.
So it's like, it is cool seeing people from the neighborhood doing things.
Yeah, and still be able to be in the neighborhood.
Yeah, if it was all like chain things and stuff like that, that's what I would really be against. But I'm not against the come up that is happening now. But again, I just want, in case anyone gets mad at me, I want to admit I don't live there currently.
Yeah. Well, all right. So in that nexus, though, even those stores you mentioned, when you were going to high school, that was like a real mix for where a lot of Chicago hip hop would interact and live and get records and meet one another, and then also pop over to WHPK.
Yep.
And so you were beginning to be in that. Where did you go to high school?
I went to high school further south in Beverly at Morgan Park Academy, which is a small college prep, I think.
Yeah.
School.
Yeah, but you come
Sully
home
went,
and
went there.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's
a classmate of mine, or a couple years younger than me, but at the same time.
How important were those spaces in Hyde Park, and who were some of the people that you began to kind of, you know, run into and interact with?
So, Dr. Wax was, I think without Dr. Wax, I definitely wouldn't be here at all. That was a place. So I went to high school in Beverly, and I did not have a car. I would take either the bus. I'd take a bus to downtown, and then I'd take a train from downtown all the way south to Beverly.
Oh, wow.
And
Metro, or were you taking the red?
The Metro, yeah. I'd take the six downtown, and then get on a Metro, and it would go all the way to 111th Street. And then But all my friends lived really in the suburbs. It wasn't or far south like that. There was no one in Hyde Park and very few people around. So before I had my own car or could even drive, the weekends I was back in Hyde Park, and a lot of my time was spent going to Dr. Wax and walking down 53rd Street. And that's where I met Taiwan Davis, who was part of the Necrobats. And that's the guy I remember, like, asking him, can you give me some hip-hop music that I'm not seeing on TV? And he's the one who put me on to all that. He introduced me to Pugsley Adams. He took me to WHPK and really showed me. That's where I really learned that there's the rap music that we see in like hip hop existing on TV, but then there's a real life version of it, and that's what got me into the larger, like, learning about hip hop culture, being involved in that when I got into college, and kind of what I do now. I think a lot of it stems from those Saturdays, and then I started just going there after school, and that's just where I was at getting music, and also learning about stuff.
So was that kind of like the motivation to start Ruby Hornet?
Well, the motivation to start Ruby Hornet came from just wanting, and I think it's the same motivation that has motivated me to DJ before Ruby Hornet. When I was in school and living in that place I was telling you about, I had a different website called soundslam.com, which is where I would interview a lot of people and do my thing. But it's always, the motivation's always been to be a part of hip-hop in whatever way I could, and then to share the things I was really, the things I was passionate about. And that's, I think, the motivation still today.
So how did, because Ruby Hornet is a blog space where mm-hmm. you do interviews, reviews, put out new music.
Yeah.
How did you, was your first foray into the creative arts via hip hop as a journalist?
I would say it was as a fan, and then me producing anything would be, yeah, journalist DJ kind of went hand in hand. And then I was also in this organization in college called Hip Hop Congress, which was just starting out at that time, and we were starting a chapter at IU, and through like organizing through shows, did MC battles, participated in an MC battle once.
Oh, okay. As Roosevelt Treasure Trust.
I don't even know what. I think I was Nace the Lyrical Miracle.
Nace?
My middle name is Nace Chaim, which means miracle of life. So yeah. I was Nace the Lyrical Miracle. Yeah. This was before, oh no, Mace was out. Yeah, so I had Mace and Nace.
Yeah, and you foresaw his dip into Christianity, so you were like trying to battle him from an Old Testament standpoint?
This was before he left, I think. Yeah, but anyway, it didn't go well.
That was the beginning and the end of your rap battle
kind
career?
Of. That was when I was like, I'm going to do the DJing and play the beats for these dudes and let them do the battling. Yeah. So that's kind of the where I think it all started. And it was cool being able to do that in a place like Bloomington, Indiana, because and pre-social media, pre-internet like
right.
that, because you can make mistakes there. And
so what was the Hip Hop Congress? Because that had some traction for a little while mm-hmm. in that era. And
mm-hmm. yeah.
I mean, I remember it as like a growing college-based kind of cultural organizing movement.
Yeah. So it was like across the U.S. they had chapters?
Yeah. It started in California. It started in San Jose area with these two guys, Shimako Noble, and he had a partner, and they were doing community events, not attached to a college. And then simultaneously, these two guys, Jordan Bromley and Ron Gubitz, had the idea for an organization also called Hip Hop Congress, and they were both using the name and kind of doing the same thing, and found out about each other and then decided to link. And the goal of the organization was to merge activism with hip hop. They're already intertwined, but
right.
to bring to the forefront the activism element of Hip Hop Congress. So bringing awareness, being involved in various communities, and they were in California in the community. They were in Bloomington, Indiana. There was one at University of Illinois. There was one at USC and UC Santa Barbara. And that was like the core five. And then it grew really high. And we started having even national conventions and all kind of stuff. But yeah, that was the thing of like,
what were some of the tools that you learned in that space? Because you were, you know, doing a lot of different things that you kind of carried through to now, I mm-hmm. imagine, just in terms of being a producer of shows or whatever.
Yeah.
What were some of the things that you would do then that kind of...
Yeah, I mean, I interviewed someone for the first time for Ruby Hornet. It was with this MC who I love, Wordsworth from
yeah,
the
amazing.
Lyricist Lounge.
Yeah.
And his album Mirror Music, which is an amazing LP. If you've never heard it, go back and check for that. But learning that, just cutting my teeth and learning how to talk to people, definitely throwing shows, booking artists, doing things like I won't say the name, but I booked an artist for a big, we did a week of programming called Hip Hop Awareness Week. And we had a headlining artist that we booked, and then the day of the show, he's like, he calls us and is like, I'm at the airport and I'm not getting on this plane unless you give us $300 more. So having to deal with that at that age prepared me for a lot of like, I've seen this before. And
what'd you do?
We ended up giving him the money simply because
yeah.
it was
at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a headliner, like, right?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
A headliner of a whole week of activities.
That's weak.
It was super weak. And then Binary Star went on before them. Like right before him was Binary Star, and honestly, we really didn't even need. Like it could have just been Binary Star
is hard. Body,
yeah, they and that was like both like at the high.
Familiar.
If you know One Below, he was
One Below,
part of that
and Syn Cilla,
yeah, mm-hmm. from Detroit.
Amazing okay. album, yeah. And that is Masters of the Universe. And then before that, they had a Water World,
and they fucked heavy with Chicago, and Chicago fucked heavy with them. They put on and had a lot of Chicago rappers on their records, and did a lot of collabs with Chicago folks.
A great, and if you find a physical copy of that album, it's worth a lot of money because it's like selling heavy right now.
Nice, yeah.
So that kind of thing, and then also you know dealing with the community, we would do canned food drives. The battle part of it, and like we had to also go up against the administration of the college, like,
right?
Figuring that shit out.
Was the college responsive to what you were doing?
So we had a battle planned for at a dorm when this is my senior year, and the day of the MC battle and a canned food drive as well. That was the thing. Everything we were doing would be there'd be a charity or a more socially conscious realm to it. And then the McNutt, that was the dorm we were at, shout out to McNutt, they the day of, so many things happened the day of, said, you know what, we think
that's
this
the life
is
of a
be.
Promoter really,
yeah.
Right,
it's like, but that was the first time where someone said, you know what, I think this is going to be dangerous, and we don't want people coming to our dorm anymore. We didn't understand what this event was, so that was like my first time dealing with that kind of, well, anti-hip-hop and, you know, obviously, I think, racist as well type of situation. And we actually ended up showing up. I called this writer for the school paper that I knew and was like, yo, we're going over here and we're going to show people, like, why this is whack. And it's funny because they had security there. And I remember being quoted in the paper of, like, there's literally security here to tell us that our event is shut down because we lack enough security. So it was like made no sense. And actually I got a meeting with the one of the deans of the college. So they did react. Once that made the school newspaper, they were like, okay, we gotta address this situation. So I don't want to shit on
feathers.
The school.
That's
I
right.
do. I do think it was a good school.
Yeah.
You're
well,
a Hoosier, right?
Yeah. Hoosier. Yeah.
That's certainly a good experience. I mean, I think that is valuable experience for beginning to build your own lane in the city of Chicago. So you graduate and you come back to the city.
Yep.
Ruby Hornet begins to do have first of all a big
there's
impact
a
in putting there's a gap.
Yeah. Okay. Keep going though.
Well, Ruby Hornet begins to put on for a lot of people. I think like there's that era where it's. You know, you and Andrew at Fake Shore have different tastes. So in some ways, it's like a real, it's two different streams, but both representative of all of the new shit that's happening in Chicago. You are also putting on for other artists from around the country. But you also began to start to throw events.
Right.
As a part of that project.
But when did you start Ruby Hornet?
Ruby Hornet started in 2008.
So the same year.
Yeah, the same year
as Fake
Shore,
right?
Yep. And I knew Andrew around that time. I was DJing a party for this thing called The Brotherhood, which was Fly and Leaders and Instrumental and a bunch of other streetwear brands. They had a party at the Nike offices, and I DJed with some other folks, and Barber emailed me to introduce himself as Fake Shore Drive and get a press pass, and you came to that Nike party. But yeah, that's when we started, and the event part of it was because I was already DJing, and everything just kind of came together. And I realized that was kind of like my thing, that I was DJing, but then I had this writer side as well, and that was like a powerful combination.
Well, because as a DJ, you're already like you're like a tune selector, you know, you're a tastemaker automatically.
Yep.
When you're a writer, you're a critic, you know, you're still doing the same thing in a way, just, I guess, analyzing it.
Yeah. Also,
more than just playing it.
Yeah. Also, kind of making people's tastes too, or like putting on for artists that you think people should be listening to.
I mean, it's
as
like
well.
All curatorial.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is kind of then I would imagine might lead to then the extension of putting on shows, which I think what evolved to a lot of things, right? Because I feel like the shows evolved to the closed session studio sessions.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So take us through a little bit of that, because I want to begin to talk about the label.
It started as videos, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Closed session just started as a video concept, but from the early, from the very, after the very first one, we were like, okay, this could be something cool.
Was the first one?
Currency, Rapper yeah. Weed. That's actually coming up. Next year will be the 10th anniversary of Rapper Weed, and we're going to do some cool stuff around that. But I guess the best way to put it is I wanted to be like Green Lantern and DJ Drama and DJ Khaled, and I thought for a second, I don't want to say a second, it's not like my MC aspirations where I got booed off the stage and was like, this is not going to be how I express myself. DJ and I was doing fairly well.
Yeah, you're a nice DJ.
Yeah, it was going some places. And I was doing mixtapes. I have a lot of like good mixtapes under my belt. I'm happy about my discography. but so I was like, all right, well, maybe I could be at that level of DJing and put out these mixtapes and then start to have my own albums. Like Tony Touch and that kind of thing. That's what I really wanted to do. So originally, we started doing tracks that I could not just post on Ruby Hornet, because the whole thing about a blog at that time was being first and having the exclusive music. So as you said, like Andrew and I had different tastes, and we also had different networks, and we also were wanting to get different sounds. So I wanted to create music that I could exclusively put out on my mixtapes, play at the parties, have rappers show up and rap those songs at these parties.
You were producing tracks, or you were working with producers?
I was working with producers.
Okay.
You were the host.
I was the
selector.
The producer in the sense of, you know, finding these artists.
Like the executive producer.
Executive producer, I guess. Or the idea of like what a producer does. You find the musicians and mm-hmm. then the writers and put them together and make a song. That's what I was doing. And
Jewish Quincy Jones.
Yeah, there you go. That's what kind of sparked those things. We did a Swagger Like Us remix, Swagger Like Shy. That was the first kind of taste of that. And it had Bump J, Mickey Halsted, Knowledge, Really Doe, Marvo.
Wow. What
and
a
GLC.
What a fucking wow. room.
And yeah, did all that in the same space.
Yeah.
And then continued on, and then I think it was Knowledge who was like, we started throwing those parties at Lava Lounge, and Knowledge was like the de facto host and would rap all the time, and then he's like, you should bring other people that you're writing about into this. And I was like, yeah. He's like, I know this guy Currency, and I remembered Currency from my earlier writing days with his single about where his female friends keep their cash. He had a song, I don't know if you remember that one, Where the Cash At was
yes.
actually the
yeah.
title. But
yeah.
anyway, he kind of reinvented himself he was like a key of the internet rap scene, and Currency came to Chicago, and we actually did his show, and that was actually Mike Posner's first Chicago show as well. So it was Mike Posner, Currency, Mike Terror, mm-hmm. and I don't know if Hollywood Hope performed at that, or Mano, possibly both, or one or none, I don't know, but yeah, man, I've kind of lost track of whatever you were saying, but that was the first closed session, because we wanted
as a party.
We did the party, and then I had met Mike, and he let me use the studio whenever I wanted, so then I was like, let's go to the studio. We told him the idea. He was down, and he said...
And this is Mike Kolar.
Mike Kolar, yep.
And the studio
yep.
is...
With Soundscape.
Soundscape. And so, yeah, so you were able to get in the studio and record the making of a track?
Yeah. I was able to... I would get beats. I got beats from different people. Tony Baines gave that selection of beats. And yeah, I was like, hey, we're just going to bring you to the studio, and we just want you to make a song from scratch. This was not a planned out thing. We were going to film it. Like Virgil, who I was running Ruby Hornet with, we're all self-taught as well. Again, I don't know. It's not like I came up and from the jump was like, I'm going to do these studio sessions. It's just all organically happened and DIY. He did not train to be a photographer or a videographer. That was just doing it out of necessity and getting good at it. So, yeah, we said, come through. Let's make a song. We could put it out with the whole weekend of activities. And Currency did it. He did a song called Rapper Weed that was super dope. He said he didn't want anyone else at the studio. He turned off the lights. I think subconsciously, I was a big Dilated Peoples fan, and they had a song called Closed Session. I think subconsciously I thought of, oh, this is a closed session, like, let's do that. And the name just seemed to take off. And I think after that, when we put the song out the next day, it just spread over all these blogs so fast. And it was just something where we kind of knew we were onto something. And then what also happened was artists started to reach out and say, we're going to be in Chicago. Can we come to your studio? Can we do this? And it started to become a circuit for this certain era of artists. And like Tanya Morgan hit us up, and then Sky Zoo wanted to come, and then like Amanda Diva, and we had Big Pooh from Little Brother, and kind of like started to be a thing. For people who could rap for real, and also wanted,
maybe outside of Amanda Diva,
the artists that started to do it would say like, yeah, well, I watched this artist's video. We did one with LEP, and they were like, we spent the whole day, I remember Mooney was like, but the whole day watching all these documentaries, and we don't want to just be in the catalog. We want to be at the top of the top of
so
the catalog.
To one up each other.
Yeah, we're in the studio.
Some rapper shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Blue is an interesting guy. That was like a
blue
from
the crazy one. Oh, I love him, but he crazy.
From Cali.
Blue and Exile.
Blue and Exile. Crazy. Yeah. So Blue was also like a really interesting one where
he's a good lyricist.
I don't know.
No, he's amazing. Yeah. No shade.
No. Yeah,
crazy just, is good for artists.
Yeah. Listen.
Like, I don't know. I don't know what happened. There's some communication gaps. Anyway, I finally get him to the studio, and I put on the one. It wasn't out, but we had a rough cut of the one we did with Raekwon and DJ Babu. And so he's like watching that, and then the documentary with Blue is all part of it, of him watching another one, and then like, oh, that's the chef. Oh, and then it's like, yeah, man, Babu has sent us some beats just for you. And he's like, oh, Babu gave me some beats. All right, let's play the beats.
Wow.
So that was like a big part. And like, I don't even know if the new generation of hip hop artists would participate in something like that again, where we're have no money. This is a free party. They're going to rap next to me at a small bar. Some of them slept on a couch, but they were like, we need to do this because this is how we need to enter the Chicago city.
You know? They wouldn't. And I have a lot of opinions about that.
You know, I think there is a side of it that would.
Small.
Small, but also
the
like
ones
hungry
who
and
don't
dope.
Feel entitled.
And, yeah, yeah.
But
those are the folks who...
Few.
Yeah, but I think that those are the
changed.
Folks who like...
I mean, it's just changed, you know? But to think that... And that was the point of those parties, and the whole experience was, we're going to capture a rare moment where if you don't see Action Bronson for free at Beauty Bar, you're never going to see this guy in an environment.
Yeah.
Like that. I remember when we had Sia the Prince right after his BET freestyle, and then everybody, we had booked him, and then that BET freestyle came out, and we were like, yep, we got, like, this is going
to be alive.
Insane.
Shit.
Yeah.
And I remember there just being electric in there, and he came out to So Appalled, and you could not move. Like, it was wild. And I remember, rest in peace, Timbuktu. He was there that night, and he said, like, he got on the mic and was like, everybody in Chicago is right here right now. And then like Sci, it was nuts. But you know, I don't know if those moments, just the way music is going, I don't know if those are happening, or if I had that idea today, could I
would
start
pop in
that
the same
yeah.
way
start that today.
Well, that the all that made the space of Soundscape a very popular destination for an emerging young Chicago music scene, mm-hmm. right? So you guys were also providing space for a lot of artists who we know and love now.
Yep.
You were getting them some of the first studio time that they had access to. Is that because of the popularity of those videos and all what you were doing? And how did, you know, because there's all these, you know, incredible photos and stories of, like, you know, you're and Mike are in the studio with, like, a very young Vic, a very mm-hmm. young Chance, a very yeah. young Saba, Mick, no name, yeah. like, run down the gamut. Mm-hmm. They
I mean,
all.
I've seen, like, Chance and Vic tweet about how Reed Hornet was, like, one of the first blogs to
yeah.
even write about their music, you know?
Yep.
So.
I think that happened because of being out there, and like those were artists that were also at the end of the day high school kids that were really rabid hip-hop fans as well, and like had those aspirations, and like the way that I started reading Rolling Stone and wanted to become a music writer and would see or playing like wanting to be I originally wanted to be a major league baseball player, and I would like go and
look, hence the card collection, I guess,
yeah, like yeah. study hard and play all the time I could.
What'd you play? What position?
I think in Little League you play everywhere, but I found a home at first base for a while, and that's when I made the traveling team. It was as a first baseman.
Okay.
But I just think that it was, again, a special time, and like what Ruby Hornet and Fake Shore Drive did was provide a tangible path for aspiring artists in Chicago, where I could get my music on this website and I could do this party and I could record at this studio and I can have some stops that I think previous generations
infrastructure
may not
right,
have had.
There are steps to getting on.
Yeah.
Right. And there are no steps to getting on now, but like it's all just kind of a mess. I mean, you know,
some algorithms.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but this is. I mean, I think for Chicago, these ladders.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, are essential to.
But people want to be skipping rungs and shit.
Facts. Yeah.
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 I digress.
No, yeah. Tara got a lot. Tara's about to let off all these hot takes.
I feel you on all.
Can't
that.
Wait for the next article. The think piece. When rappers skip too many steps.
But I was also a de facto publicist for a lot of these,
yeah.
these
artists
happens,
because,
yeah.
Again, I'm trying to grow Ruby Hornet and I'm trying to grow me as RTC. And the biggest thing, one of the biggest thrills was going to Nah Right and it'd be like, this is the new Vic Mensa, props to RTC for sending this to me.
True.
So I would not just tell like, so with Vic or some of the, you know, Scheme or Mickey or anybody in that time, Chance, like, it we're going to premiere this on Ruby Hornet, and then I'm going to send it to every other hip-hop blog because I want to get my name out there. And then you're going to also be there. And I think that's what also led to new premieres because they yeah. knew that I was going to really care about this. And
that was a great time when the blogs were
really
super popping like that.
Yeah.
And but they were all like intimately interconnected because there weren't that many of them.
Right.
And in some ways, like, you know, you and Andrew also put on regionally, which I think also put other people on to the need to represent regionally.
Yep.
But that's how this shit even starts here. You know, you got to have a regional fan base before.
Yeah.
You know, you can think of anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why I think it became a special place and people wanted to get in that building. And it was a source of pride to be on the site. And that's awesome. And, you know, just like me being on this show right now, I was like, damn, you know, this is cool.
And when did you turn it over? When did it become then this? Because you're doing the parties, mm-hmm. you're putting out individual songs. When were you? You know, when did you decide to start the label?
So that happened around 2013. We did a couple compilations by this point. We had done three overall compilations, and then I think part of it was the changing of like how new artists come up. So like, we kind of ran out of artists that could do this circuit, and we're just like, we see an artist, we do a song, they leave, it's all good. The lasting legacy is really going to come from working with local artists, putting out proper albums, being part of a team. And then also I just the grind of running a website at that time, I was just also burned out, and being in the studio
that's a daily,
was a new
that's
fun
a daily thing.
Thing.
Yeah.
Hourly.
You didn't have any writers?
Not really. I mean, I was really at that time in 2012, Virgil I was running with, he left and moved to Austin, and I was just doing it myself. Sean CK was helping me out, but it was a every second, every
yeah.
hour.
Yeah, for sure.
And you like you
also
like being
aggregating,
it,
you know.
Aggregating, yes. doing those ads. Parties, yeah. the all that.
But you liked being in the studio.
I liked being in the studio and just the idea of, I think, you know, so many fans have an idea at one point of running a label or DJing. You know, it's kind of a natural thing. So, yeah, we were like, fuck it. I left the site and started CS, figured out how to, like, piece by piece, kind of been teaching ourselves how to do that.
Yeah, so you guys have put out how many records at this point?
I know it's over double digits. I don't really... let's say 15.
Okay.
I'll just say around that.
So let's talk catalog a little bit, and I want to talk about some of what you have coming up and coming out. And I know you guys just put out a really incredible big project with FemDot, and I know you're constantly working on many and with many new artists that mm-hmm. we might not even be aware of. But
sure.
But in the catalog, what are some of your favorites, and what are some of the big successes for the label?
Some of my favorites, well, I gotta say, and what I'm just not gonna talk about the compilations. Those are my favorites for other reasons, but from like 2013 on, and I don't want to leave anyone out.
No shots.
The vinyl that I gave you today is Rude One's album, Wonderful. That's one
and
of my favorites.
Salute Rude One, man. He's
a guy who really gave me my first bigger gigs, like putting me, opening up for The Alchemist, opening up for Babu, opening up for Revolution and things like that. So that
and
was
there are some hitters on this record, man.
Yeah.
You know, Rock Marciano, West Side Gun, Drew, Conway.
Yeah. That came out in 2016.
Yeah, yep. this record bangs.
Yeah, so that's and then on there is a song. One of my favorite just songs from our catalog is the Rude One track that features Shirt.
Yeah,
that
was a single, right?
A thousand Dutches. Great,
it's a lot
record.
Of Dutches.
But his project we put out.
He's from the East Coast.
He's from New York City. But his EP we put out called Rap Money is one of my favorites. A Villa's Carry On Tradition is a favorite of mine. The Show You Suck EP was our first project. Hmm. And then, you know, all the Kwaku stuff is one of, like, that's my favorite stuff.
Yeah,
Matt Love.
He's become a big pillar of the of the label, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of your.
Kwaku and Boathouse. Yeah.
His projects are also really good. Hibernation.
Those are like my entryway into Close
that,
Sessions.
That was a new. I mean, when we had Kwaku, Boathouse, and Odd Couple kind of all come together at the same time, that and then Jamila, that like kind of really breathed new life into CS. And then that 2016 year when we were able to put out Nat Love, and then right after that Heaven, you know, that's like,
it's a big moment for the label.
Those were like, without those,
because you were getting at that point now national, international looks with those records, right? I mean, and some of it is also the PR you put behind it.
Yeah, definitely.
But those records went.
They really, I mean, stretching out, getting Best New Music on a Pitchfork, landing on, like, just, yeah, the, it was kind of like, and I'm not diminishing any of our previous releases, but these were, and definitely with how the music was being written about and talked about and what they were saying, it definitely felt like these were important. And and Heaven, really, for the time that it came out and what it was about and who Jamila is, was another higher level of importance, not even talking about how great the actual music is, but just like everything else that came with it.
It hit the zeitgeist
in a really
brilliant way.
I tell people sometimes that the day like Jamila emailed me her signed agreement and officially joined was like, just, I was like, damn, okay, this is awesome. And it was a life-changing moment. Finding Kwaku, Jamila, those are things I think that for my whole career, hopefully I have a long career in music, but those are some of those releases that I'll always, when I die in the obituary, will be like, worked with. I would list those artists and those people like that. They are just special. Yeah. Everyone is special, but I'm, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, yeah. And those are big for the label too. Yeah. I mean, that kind of that was both those records. I think also, I mean, even for you, Tara, right? That was like an introduction of CS to a much broader population, I think.
Yeah, because even I interviewed Jamila about that record, so you know,
right?
Yeah,
I mean, if Tara Mahadevan's interviewing yeah. you know, you've hit the big time. Right. You feel me? You know what I mean? Like, sure. You know, shit is official at that point. And like, damn, yo, I'm mad nervous right now. Tara Mahadevan's asking me these hard hitting questions.
Wow,
many people.
Anyone
don't.
Felt that way?
Oh yeah, I think a lot of people love your interviews.
Oh, thanks. 100%. I interviewed y'all for the hundreds. I think
you did. Yeah about their favorite records.
Yeah.
And so, little people know, Kevin made that introduction. I saw you at Soho House randomly, and you were like, yeah, I want to talk to you about this.
Yeah, you know, I'd be out here. So this also has been a big year for you. And so what are some of the projects you guys have put out, and what are some of the things that, yeah, what are some of the projects you've just recently put out?
So we put out, in March, we put out EP from a new artist we're working with named Johnny Jones. It's called Cocoons. He's really, really dope.
Yeah.
Very special person as well. And then we put out an EP from an artist named Jack Larson, who is a little different than I think what people know of us, more in the indie pop, bedroom pop lane. But he's a student of mine at Columbia, so that's how I got to know him. And then we just released FemDot's album, De La Creme 2.
So dope.
Yo.
Yeah. Which is just so layered, too. Like, so many layers. And that, I think that's going to have a long life. Like, people are going to catch on to it. Because
you got to read it. It's a novel. You got to, you know.
For real. And then, man, I don't know when this episode will air, so it might be out when this airs, but Kwaku has a new song and is going to have a lot of new music. Webster X is releasing. We have a bunch of music coming out with him. And those are kind of the next two things. And then after that, we'll see. But I'm really excited about the summer and really the rest of the year.
You've built a really powerful team at Closed Sessions. And you know, I don't want people to think it's just you. And also because you've built an in-house studio team, but also designers, photographers, videographers.
Creative director, right?
Like who is some of the CS squad?
Okay, cool. Yeah, well, the creative director you're talking about is Jamil Bridgewater, a.k.a.
So
Bridges. Yeah, so, I mean, he's another injection of a new perspective that has been key, because you know, it can't just be me. I don't even go out anymore. I'm not a young person like that anymore, and I'm not gonna be the face of this or carry this for the long forever. I wanted, you know, I'm always gonna have my thing, but Bridges, we have a great team of interns right now. We've had so many people in the past that are doing their thing that have come through. I'm just as proud of the artists we've worked with that go on to do big things, whether it was one session or helping them start getting their music out to the label, but also like people like Nico Washington and I don't know why, Jack Olovich, Cooper Fox, people like that that have also come through and worked with us from the creative side. And then we have I don't know what she's doing now, but Sylvia was a really good designer and artist.
Yeah. And then of course Kolar,
well, yeah, that goes without saying.
Yeah.
But yeah, Michael Kolar, I mean, I think him just opening the studio to me way back, and I think there's his best quality from that time was the forward thinking, because when I did a mixtape for Knowledge, we grew up together, and then Knowledge became a rapper and Kids in the Hall, and we started doing mixtapes, and I did his album Chicago Picasso, but we did a mixtape, and he recorded at Soundscape. Mike mastered, was going to master my mixtape, just make sure everything sounded right. And I was like, how much do I owe you? And he said, you know, you could just pay me for this mixtape, or you could pay me for every mixtape. That's fine. But I see what you're doing. You're doing these cool things. You're working with these artists. How about this? You could use the studio anytime you want, but just use my studio for stuff. So I was like, okay, great. And he was, I mean, not many studios were giving away studio time. That was like an unheard of
thing. And not to Chicago hip-hop artists.
Not to Chicago hip-hop artists. But he would give that up. He, where many studios would want a journalist or writer to not come in, he said, come in. Oh, you want a photograph? Photograph. You want to do a flip cam? I don't know what the fuck a flip cam is, but yeah, let's do a flip cam. He traded some studio time for ad space on a burgeoning hip-hop website, blog. I mean, so that was pretty forward thinking.
Ahead of the curve, yeah.
And he took a risk, and it worked out.
Yeah, bet. So what are some of the things that you are listening to and kind of motivated by outside of maybe the CS universe? I know you, I know you teach at Columbia College, and you have your head in a lot of different spaces. But
yeah.
What are some of the things you're either listening to or reading?
I've been on a binge of like music and other people's memoirs. I started with the Craig Hodges book, and then
it's a good one.
Read The Awkward Thoughts of W. Kamau Bell. He's actually grew up in Hyde Park too, so that was cool. I read The Old Dirty Bastard unauthorized biography. That was pretty good. It's called Raw. I read the Wu-Tang like One Night in Shaolin book.
Oh.
I read Jerry Heller's autobiography after seeing Straight Outta Compton. I wanted to see like what his stories were.
Autobiographies are so fun.
Yeah.
They're just like really so evocative and place you in that moment.
Yeah. You know? The You God book was solid. It was funny. I interviewed Raekwon a couple weeks ago at Soul House, and we were walking into the interview, and I was talking about You God's book, and he had funny things to say. But salute to the chef. But yeah, that's what I've been reading. Right now, I've also been reading, it's called, I think, Damned Since Birth or Marked Since Birth. It's about America's history with race and racism. But that book is like 600 pages or so. So it's taken me months. But I'm now finally, it starts in like the 1200s, and now I've finally made it to the 80s, the 1980s. So yeah, but listening to, I really like the Mayhem Loren and DJ Muggs projects, of course, the Jay-Z, Beyonce, the new Nas, I've listened to all the Kanye records.
Push,
of course.
Hard Body.
Bridges has been playing the J-Rock album at high volumes in our office.
Fire.
And that I hear all every day. He pretty much starts his day with Win. That was like...
Okay. But honestly, that's like not the best song on that.
No.
Yeah.
But it's a great song.
But it goes.
To start
it's a good, yeah.
That's
to,
how I
to
know
start
Bridges
the day with,
is here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's
oh,
like,
true.
Just,
yeah,
I just
yeah,
hear
yeah.
Win,
yeah.
Win, Win, blaring.
Yeah, exactly.
True.
Get it.
And then the interns have put me on to stuff I'd never heard of or anything. And it's funny because I don't really know some of the artists they're up on. And then I'll come out and say, I asked them, hey, what do you guys think of that new Fonte album? And they're like, what do you think? You know, Little Brother, right? Nah.
Crickets.
I didn't know. And so now I like really have to check myself.
The only person who talks about Fonte on my timeline is DJ Booth, and shout out Z.
Wow, that's
but...
a good album.
Yeah. Also where a lot of rappers got their style from.
That's why I was really surprised.
Y'all age and Jewish.
So I just didn't. Well, I have a great.
We
one
have
my
great
first
appreciation
from. was from Little Brother, my first real DJ drop. And anyway, but yeah, like I think I was surprised that they didn't know Little Brother just because of how important they were to even someone like Drake, who they play Drake
right
every
exactly.
day. Bridges
exactly.
loves Drake. If you see Bridges, talk to him about Drake. He would love to talk to you about Drake.
But that's why we got to be better kind of in terms of the way we tell the story, because Drake is well versed in Fonte.
Mm-hmm.
And so why would not younger listeners also not, you know, in some ways that's like on us probably
they're
as
not,
like older heads and
viral,
educators,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but pop. I mean, those, yeah, Fonte, oh, Little Brother records are brilliant. But
you know, they're not dramatic.
Yeah. My man, where can folks find you? And do you want people to send you their mixtapes?
People can find me.
No.
I mean, all the usual spots, Twitter, DJ_RTC. Email me, alex@closesessions.com. Send me music. You know, I can't promise I'll get to it, but I'm totally open to people sending their music or whatever they want to do. If you want to talk about hip hop or old baseball cards or any kind of stuff, hit me up. I'm available.
Hip hop or baseball? Gotcha.
Basketball cards too. I've been buying unopened Upper Deck from the '90s.
Oh,
and
right. Hoping to get that young Jordan rookie. I guess that's earlier.
Yeah. I got though. I recently got, and I'll buy like an unopened box of 36 packs. That's what the retail box is, and they just like very cheap now. And I'll just open them and then arrange them. I bought new folders and it will arrange them by number of cards. So like 1 through 150 or whatnot. But yeah, like the Larry Johnson iconic draft day cards. That's really what I'm hoping to find in every pack. Jordan and like, you know, Malone, Stockton, Pippen, that Olajuwon. But then really it's for those draft day rookie cards and those photos of them in awkward clothes. And
amazing.
Like probably the happiest day of many people's lives.
Yeah. Oh, well, facts. That's a good point. Yeah. Well, yo, man, thank you so much for being here. You know, look forward to all the closed session drops, and really glad Ruby Hornet is back in the mix too.
Man,
so.
thank you guys for doing this, what you do overall, and for having me. I'm so excited to be finally at the corner store.
Yeah, it's about time. Hey, thank you, DJ Exhibit, for the beat.
Langston Nelson for the logo and art.
Big up WGN Radio. Shout out to our super producer, DJ Cash Era.
And boss man, Todd Manley.
Thank you, Dami.
And Marlena, the snack provider.
Shout out, Rena, the official photog in the corner store.
Stay up with us, Shy Corner Store, on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
And please, y'all, please rate and subscribe on iTunes, Apple Music, SoundCloud, and wherever you listen to a podcast. Consider giving us those 5 stars.
And tell a friend.
And thank you for listening and rocking with us. We'll see you next week.